okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 154 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with Shelton and the crew off in New Zealand on their workshop for the week, and with Adobe Creative Suite 5 having just been announced, I figured, what better time could there be than to get someone on board who could tell us all the funky new stuff that's going to be at our disposal when Creative Suite 5 ships. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce to you Mr. Philip Andrews. How are you?
Good, and thanks for inviting me along.
Mate, no worries. So I guess what we should say is that you are a professional working photographer. You are also an Adobe ambassador for Photoshop and Lightroom. You are the co-editor of Better Photoshop Techniques magazine, and you are a multiple published author of books on Photoshop and Camera Raw and all that other sort of stuff. Is there anything I missed?
And when it comes around to CS5, I was lucky enough to be on the writing team for some of the documentation for that. So
wow,
it was the first time that they grabbed someone outside of the States to actually write some of the English language release stuff for the product. So
that's the stuff that you get when you go into the help file.
No, it's just when you go to the website and you say I want to know some information about Photoshop CS5 or CS5 Extended, the documentation that you see there or anything that you download from the website or what goes out to in press releases, it's that kind of content that I was writing.
Man, that's fantastic.
It was great because it was the closest that I've actually been to the actual development of the product, and it was a fascinating experience. I went to the States a couple of times during the CS5 development and sat with the engineers and with the production team, and basically got a chance to play with all the goodies as they were being developed. And it's a very, very interesting process.
You would have been like a kid in a candy shop.
I was. Speaking to a couple of engineers, I was going, what if we could do this? And what if we could do this? And what if we could do this? And Jeff Ginnett was who's in charge of things like HDR, working with HDR and those kind of whiz-bang areas.
Yeah.
And he was going, Philip, slow down. You know, what we've got coming is fantastic and we can't give people all the bells and whistles because it'll overwhelm them. So well, let's start off slow and then we'll work through, you know, what can happen after that point. So it's fascinating to see how the whole process goes and how it works and how these guys are not just thinking about this release, but they're thinking about 2 and 3 releases time.
Wow.
And laying down the bedwork now for that.
Wow, that's full on.
Yeah, very much so.
Jeez. So enlighten our listeners on some of the good new features in Photoshop CS5.
Well, the good news is that for photographers, I believe this is probably the strongest Photoshop release that we've had for maybe 3 or 4 revisions. And in particular, the big kind of issues for me are things like we've got a complete re-engineering of the guts of Adobe Camera Raw and in turn Lightroom for Lightroom 3. And when I say the guts, I'm talking about the actual demosaicing engine, the engine that they're using for taking the semi-processed raw data that you're getting out of your camera and converting it into a file that you can actually see and work with and use. And it's the biggest change that's happened in kind of the engine room of Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw since those two products first came to market. So keep in mind that ACR came about in around about 2003. So we've been using the engineering for the demosaicing or the interpolation of the raw files from that time. So it's been completely reworked. And when I was doing the writing about this for the press releases and the documents that went out to press, I thought to myself, oh, you know, what kind of differences is this going to make? So for my own kind of peace of mind, I went and grabbed a whole lot of files that I had processed in earlier versions of Adobe Camera Raw and ran them through Adobe Camera Raw 6 with the new engine, and I was staggered to see just the increasing clarity, the way that the noise was being handled was just substantially better. I mean, the noise reduction algorithms and the noise reduction controls in Adobe Camera Raw and Lightroom 3 are stunning. I mean, if you thought that what we had before was kind of okay and that there were some other products out there that actually did it better, some plugins that actually did it better, well then take a look at these two new releases and play with them with some high ISO files, because you won't believe the level of control that you have and just how smooth and graded and but still with retaining detail that you can get it. And these kind of changes in ACR or Adobe Camera Raw are directly related to the re-engineering of the engine. Not to mention just the cleanliness of the middle values. I always found that other products were giving what I felt was a cleaner middle value to a lot of my RAW files.
So when you say middle values, you're talking about the middle of the histogram?
Yes, I am. So I felt that ACR did a fantastic job overall, and the real strength of ACR was the fact that it was tied in so tightly with Photoshop that we could go backwards and forwards using smart objects, and we could really work a smart workflow from Bridge to Adobe Camera Raw to Photoshop back to Bridge, or from Lightroom through to Photoshop and back to Lightroom. But I think that there was still work to be done in terms of optimal image clarity and image quality. But don't believe me. You download the 30-day free trials and just have a play and rework some of your old files and have a look at them. And I think you'll be surprised at just how good the quality is from that area. So that for me mightn't be like a big banner kind of new feature, but it's certainly a fantastic thing for photographers, because we're all moving forward and trying to get better results. And while we're in ACR, while we're talking about ACR, the other things that we can do in there, they've improved the post-crop vignetting controls, so no longer do you have to end up with murky highlights. If you've got highlights around the edges of your image and you're trying to add a vignette, you can choose to control how dark those highlights are, so that's really sensible. They've also added in some special effects, such as adding in grain. So on the one hand, they've got an improved noise reduction engine, but on the other hand, they've got a specialist add grain kind of feature where we can, it's the first time that we can add grain to our images non-destructively and
Sorry to jump in. Is that just in Lightroom, or is that in Camera Raw even if you're just... Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so there's a new FX tab inside Adobe Camera Raw that enables you to control your post-crop vignetting and also your grain. And so it's a stylistic thing with grain. So you can get kind of cinematic or old film style effects with your RAW files non-destructively inside Adobe Camera Raw and Lightroom. So those kind of things are really cool as well.
Now, Shelton and I were having a discussion in the last episode where we were talking about another one of the new features in Photoshop CS5, which is the content-aware fill. And there was kind of this, you know, underlying feeling that maybe this is giving photographers an excuse to get lazy with composition. How do you feel about that?
I agree that there's... That is a very interesting point of discussion, not just talking about software, but also talking about the abilities of our cameras as well. I mean, how many photographers actually move their shooting mode from A or P these days? I mean, auto or P or full program mode. I mean, the level of skills that photographers had 20 years ago in terms of them being able to interact with the shooting sequence and then interact with the processing sequence in order to generate better images, I think in some ways that has been reduced. So people don't understand as much because the quality of the equipment and the quality of the software has got better and gives better results with perhaps less understanding. But that doesn't mean that we should de-skill ourselves. I think as photographers, we owe it to ourselves to maintain the level of understanding and skills that we can, and when people started to shoot with RAW, I was hearing people say things like, oh, it's great, I don't need to worry about exposure so much because I can be a stop under or two stops over and I can just pull it back in because we've got so much latitude when shooting with RAW. Well, that's a real misunderstanding of the whole notion of how to get the best quality images. And don't de-skill yourself by saying, let me be less strict with how I'm actually exposing my images because I can fix it later. That's the wrong approach. The best approach is, let's get the best exposure that we can so that then when we pass it on to Adobe Camera Raw or Lightroom or Photoshop, we have more quality information to actually work with, more quality details in the image to actually work with. And so I don't want the features getting better and to being an excuse for photographers to actually get more lazy. So to get back to your initial question where we're talking about Con Air and Aware Film, yes, I could see how some people would think that. For me, I think it opens up a whole range of other areas where some of the really interesting areas in photography at the moment, I think, are some of the crossover areas. So areas where we're taking still images and putting them in a 3D environment, or taking still images and putting them in a movie environment or an animation environment, and working with those kind of virtual, almost virtual studios and virtual reality type scenarios. And when you're working in that environment, content aware fill is fantastic because you can take a subject that was in the foreground, extract that subject from the foreground using maybe the new intelligent selection technology stuff inside Photoshop CS5, which, let me tell you, is unbelievable. We'll get back to that hair extraction things and stuff like that. But you can take a subject, pop it off the background, put it on your new layer, and then use content-aware fill to fill in the areas in the background where that subject was. Then you could go and have some really good fun doing like 3D effects where now that you've got that, you've broken that subject into two different layers. So on one hand, yes, okay, it could be considered a way of making us lazy, but on the other hand, it is a new retouching tool that can be added to our whole arsenal of retouching tools that we have in Photoshop. And there's definitely scenarios where using the healing brush or the spot healing brush with the existing algorithms just doesn't cut it. And this particularly works well. And the next issue, for instance, of Better Photoshop Techniques, where I'm demonstrating the content aware fill, I used it in a scenario where I was doing just a panoramic stitch, three or four images together. And often when you do that, you get ragged edges around the outside, and you either have to crop into the image in order to get rid of those ragged edges, or use a fair bit of clone stamp or rubber stamp tool to actually get remake.
To fill out that edge, yeah.
Correct. And this is where Content Aware Fill gives you a leg up on that kind of scenario, because you can just select the outside, the area where you don't have image, and then just grow that selection in one or two pixels into your image area, and then Content Aware Fill it. And 85% of your job's done. There will be some areas where the Content Aware Fill has grabbed part of the image and placed it in that external or that surround where you don't want it, and you have to come back and do a bit of clone stamping. But generally speaking, you've got a leg up to create a rectilinear or rectangular shape from those often bow tie effects that you get when you're doing panorama stitches. So incredibly smart technology, but sometimes it can give you results that are unpredictable, just depending on how much you're trying to get it to do. But I have seen some incredible examples, things like a set of beach balls on the beach, different colors, some overlapping others in the shot, and several beach balls were selected and content aware fill was applied, and it actually rebuilt the edges of the beach balls that were sitting behind the subjects. It's just phenomenal.
That's awesome. So
it is awesome. So in those kind of scenarios, it's like content aware scaling that was released last time around.
Sure.
Does that then mean that we only ever shoot verticals and we don't shoot horizontals anymore because we can just stretch it out? No, it's still better to shoot the horizontal when you need it, shoot the vertical when you need it. But in scenarios where you have no other choice or where you do need to edit in that way, it's great to have good tools like that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, just in passing, the new selection tools. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those?
Well, Refine Edge has basically been put on steroids. I mean, what we've got now, something like my friend Mark Gaylor and I do a Photoshop book called Essential Skills, and one of Mark's favorite techniques in there is doing some fine hair extraction. And over the last 5 years or so, he's developed some very sophisticated hair extraction techniques. But it's, you know, 15, 16 steps to do to extract the portrait from the background, put it on another background, and not get those halo effects, which a lot of people see when you do that sort of work. Using the new Refine Edge dialogue, which has the ability to create basically a halo or radius around the subject that you're trying to extract, and then use some intelligent kind of selection algorithm to select very carefully the fine hair without you having to go and do that. You can do that whole process that we were taking 15, 16 steps in about 3 or 4 minutes. Now, he still maintains, and he's probably right, that he can get an objectively better result, but it takes him 30 minutes.
Right.
So when you compare apples with apples, if you're in a production environment, well, then certainly the Refine Edge technology that's in CS5 is just leaps and bounds ahead of where we were before.
And particularly if you've got a client who's watching the clock.
Correct. Or if you're billing by the minute and or by the hour and you've got tons of images to get through and you still need good results. So, yes, there might be a case to say that you still can get better results if you work completely manually. But in reality, in our time-compressed kind of society, this is an incredible tool. Unbelievable tool when you're making composites and montaging images together.
Yeah, right. You've covered three things so far: the selections, the content aware fill, and the ACR and its improvements. Were there any other major new features in CS5?
Sure. I mean, one of the big changes is in the area of high dynamic range imaging. So Photoshop's had high dynamic range imaging features for the last two or three releases, but it's been the approach that Photoshop has taken has been a very objective approach. In other words, let's take a series of images shot of the same subject with varying exposures. Let's blend all of those together and give you a 32 bits per channel image, which has incredible contrast range. The contrast range potentially is up to 100,000 to 1, which is about 15 stops, I guess.
Wow.
Now, if you're a shooter in Australia or somewhere where it's really sunny a lot of the time, well, that's an incredible ability to be able to cram all that information in. And once you've got that information in a file, you can then start to massage it and so maintain details in your shadows, details in your highlights, and start to massage all that information. Now, up until CS5, Photoshop took a very objective kind of scientific approach to that. Let's get the information in, let's provide the information to people, but we won't let you stylize that information too much. And there's been a few other products on the market which allows for that stylization. And if you go onto Flickr and have a look for HDR images, you'll see a lot of that stylization, very kind of dramatic and surrealistic type looking images. That wasn't really possible inside Photoshop. What they've done is completely rebuilt that whole area, and they've called it HDR Pro now. And they've provided a new interface, a new dialog box, and new mechanisms for working that allows you to stylize your images from the straight objective texture from highlight to shadow all the way through beautifully graduated through to the incredibly dynamic and dramatic surrealistic type images that you've probably seen created with other products. And what's more, at the same time, they've actually played with and solved one of the big problems associated with HDR imaging, which is moving subjects or moving cameras. So if you're actually shooting a series of images and you've got a subject moving through the frame, when you come to blend those, you often get ghosting from where those subjects in different parts. They have a de-ghosting feature, which is incredible. So you just tick on the de-ghosting, it goes and looks for the frame that has the most information and bases the core details for that HDR image on that particular frame. And so it gives you the sharpest parts in, from that frame and applies it to the blended. If you don't like that particular frame that Photoshop has actually selected, you can go manually select a different frame. So I was using it recently where I was I'd shot a range of water landscapes. Now, my water landscapes, I can't usually do HDR work with because you're getting drastically different looks every time you push the button. And when you try and blend those together, all you get is a blurry mess with ghosting here and there. But with this new de-ghosting system, I can then go through and select which particular frame has the waves or the blur or the sun or the clouds or whatever object is moving between shot. I can select that one as the primary reference file and promote those sharp details through the HDR image. It's fantastic. So it's very, very interesting way of working. And you even have the ability to make HDR monochromes, which is something that's I find particularly good because you've got detail from highlight all the way through to shadow in a high bit monochrome, which if you like shooting black and white, is just a wonderful way to work. So that's very cool as well.
So it sounds like they've done a fair bit of work on this release.
They have. There's been a lot of work done on it. Not to mention, I mean, the big news for Mac users is that we're 64-bit on the Mac. And I heard tell that the engineers, when they were first asked how long is it going to take for us to port Photoshop over to 64-bit, they were talking about, it'll take us 4 years or it'll take this number of man hours. And they've managed to almost pull it down to half to a third of that time. So they've been working really hard. And you'll see substantial performance increases if you're working with really large files in particular. Because remember, one of the big assets of working 64-bit is the fact that you can address much higher amounts of RAM. And RAM is the real issue when you're working with large files. So when I'm talking large files, there's some production people out there who are working with 1 gig or 1.5 gig files where the 32-bit structure and the lack of being able to address high levels of RAM in the previous version became a bit of a time issue.
Yeah, it would have.
But that's where you see substantial improvements.
Awesome.
A couple of other little things that they've got. Puppet Warp Tool, which is I guess, basically a free-form warping tool where you can put pins on parts of your image and push and pull them around. Works particularly well if you're trying to like straighten a road or straighten a horizon, for instance, in some of the panoramas that I shoot with fisheye lenses. They end up with kind of bowed horizons. You can use it for that sort of thing. So that's pretty cool. Something else is good, which I think a lot of people will enjoy, is the automated lens correction. So Photoshop has always had a little bit of lens correction in there with the lens correction filter, where you can do things like remove barrel distortion and some chromatic aberrations on the edges of your image. But now they've made it lens specific. So they're shipping with a bunch of stock lenses, but the really good news is they're also shipping on labs.adobe.com, a utility for you to characterize and profile your own lenses and to be able to share those online in the community. So if the particular lens and camera that you're working with isn't in the profiles that are shipped, you can actually do it yourself and create your own. So, and that's a free utility available at labs.adobe.com.
That's pretty awesome. So you can build, you know, eventually the users will create a database of just about every lens out there.
Correct. Lens and body. Sensor and lens combination are the two key issues there. And the quality and the correction effects are incredible. So if you've got a fisheye where you've got an extreme barrel distortion, it will actually correct back to a rectilinear or a rectangular format. So it'll straighten up areas of the image that are bowed. It's that good. And just released this week is the news that's going to be shipping in Lightroom 3. And it'll also be shipping in an update for Adobe Camera Raw, a free update called 6.1.
Wow, so they've got 6.1 coming out already.
Well, it'll come out and it'll have this lens correction technology inside Adobe Camera Raw. So you'll be able to apply this lens correction technology to your RAW files. At the moment, it's available inside Photoshop CS5 and you can batch process from Bridge. So you can select a bunch of images and it will use the metadata to actually locate the lens that you shot those images on and automatically apply the correction to those images. It's fantastic. It means you can take a $500 lens with incredible distortion and make it look like a $2,000 lens.
Is it safe though to really, you know, do something like a batch process on that kind of correction? Is it safe to do it as a batch process, or is it really something you should be doing on an image by image basis?
Because it's an objective type correction, so when you actually create the profile, and in fact, just this week I've been creating profiles for the next edition of the magazine. I'm going to do a step by step on how to create your own profiles.
Oh, cool!
It's essentially a checkerboard pattern that you shoot at a range of different angles, and then that checkerboard pattern, those images of the checkerboard pattern, are dragged into the utility, and it goes and identifies how much the checkerboard is deformed and creates a 3D spatial description of the lens and how it works and how it records information. Once it's done that, then essentially when you apply the correction to the image, all it's doing is saying, I know what that lens is. I know how it reacts to pointing it at something, and I'm going to correct for that.
Okay.
So I don't think it is as dangerous as doing just manual corrections, but certainly when it's applied in the raw form, we can always undo those corrections at any time.
Yeah, of course. Wow, that's full on.
It's very, very cool. hence why I'm saying it's such a strong release for photographers.
Yeah.
Because of these kind of changes. Not to mention that they had these over three dozen kind of little changes that they've applied to Photoshop, changes that have bugged people. Things like now when you actually use the measure tool to draw along an object in Photoshop, on the measure tool's options bar, there's a straighten button. So you can just click on the straighten button and it will automatically crop and rotate that image.
So you don't have to go image, rotate, arbitrary.
Yes. Oh. Yes. So just simple things like that.
That's cool.
Other areas like you can select multiple layers now and adjust the opacity on multiple layers, or you can change the layer styles and make the change to the layer style setting a default preset that you use. All those kind of little annoying things that used to bug us all, but because the guys have been working so hard at getting out new features, they don't come back and kind of tweak around the edges unless it's an issue. I mean, another great one that people always complain about is if you're working in 16-bit and you want to go and save off a JPEG, you have to convert the image to an 8-bit and then go and save it as JPEG. Well, you don't need to do that anymore. It will do the conversion from 16 to 8-bit and save as a JPEG by just going and saving it as a JPEG. So those little kind of bits and pieces that really make your life easier, they've really tried to work really hard with those kind of issues.
Hmm. I had noticed that in the time I'd been playing with Photoshop CS5 that you were now able to save JPEG straight from 16-bit, and it didn't yep. occur to me that it was just a new feature. I was like, oh, I wonder when that happened, and yeah, it is good.
Things like shadow highlights. Last time you used shadow highlights, whenever you open it, it always is the default adjustment is too coarse.
Right.
And the first thing everybody does is they jump in and change it from 50% down to 30, 35 or 37%, which is a more kind of neutral adjustment. And so they just changed the default value for that back from 50% back down to 35. So just simple things like that, which were kind of, you know, bugging people. Or in the gradient tool, they've got a neutral density preset now, which
oh,
is
nice.
Something people used to do all the time, is use the gradient tool to put a neutral density across the sky or something like that. Well, now they've got a preset, so you don't have to go and make one. It's already there, because that's the sort of thing that people were doing. So those kind of things are very cool.
Fantastic. Well, mate, thank you for popping in and having a chat. Really appreciate it.
Can I just push out one more feature?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Now, this is kind of like a little interesting pet area that I've been working with since I've been involved with this release, and that's the integration of 3D and 2D. And if you're using Photoshop Extended, then you have some new features in the 3D area. And a lot of photographers run a mile from 3D because they think, oh, it's got to do with computer graphics and it's not really something to do with me. But let me tell you that 3D and 2D combinations is becoming more and more the mainstream for a lot of commercial photographers. If you're a car photographer, an auto photographer, or a big truck photographer, or if you're involved with big companies, lots of the times you're provided with a 3D model and told to shoot a particular scene, and the 3D model has to be placed into that scene. Now, up until this release, we have been kind of limited in a whole range of things that we could do inside Photoshop in terms of the 3D world. And so the photographer would go and shoot the panoramic background, and then they'd pass the panoramic background off to a computer graphics expert and the 3D model, and those guys would do all the hard yards. Now we have a lot more tools inside Photoshop. We've had 3D for a while, but there's a lot more tools inside Photoshop now to help us take back some of that control. So we can shoot the 3D panorama. We can shoot a spherical panorama in high bits, so a high dynamic range spherical panorama, and we can use that spherical panorama to light a 3D model. Now, I know I'm getting a bit geeky here, Bruce, okay.
So hang on, just let me back up.
Yep.
A spherical panorama.
Correct.
But by that, do you mean like you were on the inside of a tennis ball and looking at all in all angles, or do you just mean, oh wow,
up down and all around?
Whoa.
So it's like you're inside the room and you've photographed above, below, and then three sweeps, one at 45 degrees, one at horizontal, and one at 45 degrees down.
Wow.
So that's a lot of images, then they're all stitched together to make a spherical panorama. Some people call it a cubic panorama as well, because it's when you actually view it, it's plotted onto the inside faces of a cube.
Right.
But we use that as a light for the object.
In what sense?
So you've got a 3D object, you place it into the 2D scene.
Yep.
And when you're trying to make that 3D object look like it's part of that scene, one of the tricky things is
matching the lighting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Emulating the lighting that was existing in the scene at the time you photographed it. Well, what better way to do it than to photograph the scene, the whole of the scene, in a spherical panorama, then place that high dynamic range photo into the 3D space and use it to light the object. Very cool.
Wow.
Then you can pull down the reflection or adjust the reflection options of the object itself and get it to reflect the environment as well.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I'm telling you.
So like an object that was 180 degrees, you know, on the other side of the...
Correct. You get it to reflect. So what we're talking about, it sounds very geeky, right? But what we're talking about is, in very simple terms, is a virtual studio.
Wow.
We're talking about photographers applying their skills of lighting, of understanding composition, of adjusting where shadows are, of placement, of framing, all of those sorts of things, but in a virtual studio. And so I believe commercial photographers of the future won't necessarily be grabbing an object, placing it on an S table, pulling lights over the top of it and lighting that object, and then producing catalogs and producing advertising from that. They'll be working in a lot more virtual kind of environments where the company sends them a 3D model and they say, this is the kind of environment we want it to sit within. Then they place that model onto a virtual kind of background. They light it using virtual lights and they seamlessly blend it into the background.
Wow.
Now that kind of stuff has been going on for a while with, you know, trucks and cars, you know, a lot of the cars that you see driving down roads aren't driving down roads because those ads were made before the cars were ready to go onto public roads. But those kind of images have been selling for like $50,000 to actually make those images.
Yeah, right.
Now photographers are starting to get the tools that they need, and hopefully through magazines like the one we produce and other areas, they'll start to build their understanding very slowly and simply till they get to a point where they will be able to light objects that don't exist in a virtual studio and create those kind of environments.
That's full on, isn't it?
It's very cool. And just to celebrate that, the next issue of the magazine actually has an augmented reality 3D model on the back. So it's the first time it's ever done in the world in a Photoshop magazine. You take your magazine, you stick it up towards your webcam, and go to our webpage, and you'll see a 3D model of the Photoshop CS5 box spinning around on the back of the magazine.
Awesome.
So it's the first time ever done in the world, and we thought, well, we'll do it so that we can celebrate these kind of changes and the fact that it is a real photographic release and it's pushing the boundaries of photography. And even though it's a bit of a head spin, some of this stuff, I think that photographers are the winners because there's a heap of creativity, creative options and features and functions and power in there. So I'm excited about this release, and you know, I'll be talking about it for 2 years, demonstrating it around Australia and other places in the world, and I'm going to really enjoy it because there's so much to talk about.
So it'll give you some fodder for the magazine for a few editions to come.
Definitely.
Excellent. Now, speaking of which, Phil has very graciously decided to offer our listeners a special offer. Do you want to elaborate on that one, Phil?
Sure. As Bruce has already mentioned, I'm a co-editor of Better Photoshop Techniques in Australia and New Zealand. We also do ship overseas. We'd love to offer you guys a 40% off discount to a subscription to the magazine. And essentially, all you'll need to do is go to our website, which is all the W's, betterphotoshoptechniques.com. That's betterphotoshoptechniques.com. And go and select the subscription deal that you want from our online store. And then when it comes to going through the checkout, if you just type in the coupon code area, SIP listener, that's SIP listener, all one word, well then that will automatically apply your discount to your order there. Now, also, if there's any Photoshop Elements listeners out there, we also have a photoshopelements.net website, which has extensive resources on there, and we'll also offer a 40% discount on membership to that website as well if you're a Photoshop Elements listener. So again, all you need to do is go through and join up as a member, and when you go to the subscription deals and go through to the checkout, then you just need to type in that SIP listener code and that will get you the discount as well.
Mate, that's a great offer. Thank you very much.
No problems at all. Happy to help.
Excellent. Well, it's been great to have you along. I'm sure some people are just sitting there scratching their heads going, what was that all about? And some people will be going, man, that was just awesome. So I really enjoyed that. So thank you very much.
No problems at all.
All right. Well, that'll just about do it for this episode. Shelton and the gang will be back next week, so it'll be great to hear what they'd got up to in New Zealand. But for now, we'll sign off and say, Philip Andrews, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers, guys.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersInPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.